from the Three Story Method Podcast Network.
This is the Serial Fiction Show.
I'm Christine Daigle.
And I'm JP Reinbush.
Welcome to the Reader's Serial Fiction Show.
Today, we've got a sci-fi story by Abby Goldsmith called Majority. The Torth are troubled by Thomas, a rising young star in the Galactic Collective. Thomas's bioengineered mind is unique, tempered by his neuromuscular disability and the fact that he was raised by primitives on the backwater wilderness of Earth. His potential to boost the galaxy's celebrity thought leaders is astronomical. But Thomas is sympathetic to slaves, including Ariok, the gladiator who chemically suppressed superhuman powers. Will Thomas quit caring about his underdog friends, or can he actually change the minds of conniving celebrities who literally believe themselves to be gods?
Abby Goldsmith is a Wattpad star where her 1.1 million word sci-fi series has garnered over 66,000 reads. Her short works are published in Escape Pod and Fantasy Magazine, as well as in anthologies by Writer's Digest Books and others. She's an alumni of the Odyssey Writing Workshop. An animator and game content writer, Abby is credited on more than a dozen Nintendo games for Nickelodeon and Disney. She is currently writing a techno thriller about the animation industry from her home in Central Texas. And now a sample of Majority, Episode 1. Content warning, this serial contains self-harm, reference to child death, and the use of a derogatory term towards people with disabilities.
Charisse ghosted through the cluttered recreation room. She might as well be a ghost, dark and shadowy. The teens in this room had said hello to her earlier, when the social worker was paying attention. Now that the adults were gone, she was no one. She was a stir of air beneath the war zone sounds of their video game. She could not resent people who ignored her, of course. Who would want to speak to a girl who never spoke? The scissors hidden in her pocket were slim and razor sharp. The mother of this place, Mrs. Hollander, had foolishly left her sewing kit unguarded. Oops. This group home seemed a lot less vigilant than the mental institution. A blocky teenager looked away from the TV and suddenly noticed Charisse. He waggled his tongue at her, as if to imply that she might be enticed by disgusting sights. Charisse tightened her grip on the hidden scissors. "Hey, Chris," a small kid said. "That guy looks just like your dad." On the TV screen, macho gangs slammed fists into faces. The blocky teen glanced at the violence on screen, and then glared at the small kid. "Oh, so funny, Thomas." The object of his sourness was severely disabled. Not only was Thomas small and prepubescent, he sat in a powered wheelchair. Judging by his stunted, withered limbs, he could not walk at all. He held a lightweight laptop balanced across his bony knees. How could such a frail kid feel safe enough to challenge that big asshole? Oh well, it was not her problem. Charisse exited the recreation room before anyone else took notice of her. Mrs. Hollander stood next to the kitchen stove, stirring a pot. It smelled like ramen noodles. Charisse sneaked past her new foster mother, just a background shadow. She reached for the rickety door, which she guessed must lead to the backyard of this decrepit house. It was always a good idea to avoid fellow victims. Children absorbed cruel lessons from their parents, Charisse knew. For instance, she herself had learned all kinds of selfish cruelty from her ma. Not that she could have protected her baby sister. Nobody could have. Even so, she should have put up a fight. That was what a good person would have done. Charisse unlatched the rickety door. Hinges creaked as she slipped into the fetid night. She eased the door slowly shut, quieter than the rain hissing upon leaves. The back porch was soft with rot. The bench looked battered from use and eroded from weather. Charisse sat. She pushed up her sleeve and poked the blade of the scissors against her bronze-toned skin. Slice. She dragged the blade, wishing it would scratch out her hatred, wishing she could release her years of pent-up screams. She sliced again, and again, and again. Maybe she ought to cut herself out of the world. Mrs. Hollander seemed pleasant and normal. No doubt she would appreciate having one less broken teenager to include around the dinner table. The flimsy door creaked open. Charisse froze, ready to hide the scissors or else stab someone. She waited to see who had dared to follow her into the night. It was the ultra-disabled kid. Thomas powered his wheelchair through the doorway, and the door clattered shut behind him. "Hi," he said in a friendly voice. "I'm your suicide watch." Charisse raised the bloody scissors in an unspoken threat. No one sane would put a little pipsqueak in charge of a suicide watch. The kid must be lying. His limbs looked as fragile as twigs, and his squeaky voice would never raise an alarm. Only extraordinarily messed up kids ended up in foster care, Charisse felt sure. Had Thomas's father or mother beaten him until he couldn't walk? He must contain a volcano of rage. He would probably make fun of her baggy clothes. Or maybe he would quiz her on what ethnicity she was. Latina? Native American? Why did she have a French name? "You're Charisse." Thomas fumbled for the notebook tucked by his side and painstakingly tore out a sheet. "I don't mind that you're silent. I can hear your thoughts." What crap was this? Charisse narrowed her eyes at the disabled kid. Thomas had probably never met anyone outside the borders of New Hampshire. He was white, and his hair was the color of wet sand, like many people in Appalachia. No doubt he would zero in on how different she looked and bludgeon her with it. Or maybe he would attempt to reel her in with false pity, ready to slam her with a harsh joke the instant she let her guard down. Everyone wanted to trick the mute girl into saying something. It was a taunting game. "I know you're not physically mute," Thomas said. "You have a legit phobia of speech. That doesn't mean you're broken." He folded the sheet of paper, this way and that. "Everyone misjudges me also. I know what that's like." He actually sounded sympathetic. "You're afraid that if you start speaking, you'll scream," Thomas said, "and you won't be able to stop." Charisse ignored the throbbing of her cut arm. No one had ever described her silence so accurately before. It was as if Thomas saw who she truly was, beneath her glasses and thick hair. But that was impossible. "Your mother punished you every time you spoke." Thomas fluffed the paper, sculpting it. "For your entire life, up until recently, you were unable to speak without suffering a punishment. That's why your throat closes up whenever you try." Charisse smelled the dirty gag stuffed in her mouth, as if she'd just begged for something to eat. Ma hated complaints. Maybe her silence really was because of Ma. Was that possible? Charisse had always assumed that she was born defective and pathetic, just like Ma said. But hadn't Ma said the same things about the baby? The baby who wouldn't shut up? Glitzy kept wailing, drowning out the flies that buzzed around their trailer. She must have been very hungry. Ma kept punishing her, until that final time, when Glitzy went silent forever. "I hate Ma. I hate her." The pain in Charisse's torn skin was nothing next to her searing fury. She wanted to stab Ma in the gut, stab her until she screamed, and then keep stabbing until she went silent. Stab her eyes out, stab her throat. Surely no one else seethed with feral, animalistic rage. If other people felt this way, they would never be able to laugh or smile. They would not have kind eyes like this boy. That was how Charisse knew that her Ma was right, after all. She was a defective freak. "Your Ma never knew you." Thomas made more creases in the paper. "She never tried to get to know you. And your rage is something you've rightfully earned. It's not a sign of defectiveness. It's completely normal given your situation." The way he answered her exact thoughts. Charisse wanted to ask how he guessed what was inside her mind. She opened her mouth, but her throat thickened until she could no longer smell the rain. She couldn't make a sound. "You associate speaking with pain." Thomas studied her with unabashed interest. His curiosity should have made him look childlike. Instead, he seemed to lack the innocence of childhood. Charisse studied his strange eyes. Somehow Thomas looked as if he had witnessed a thousand lifetimes, like he was a grizzled old man stuffed inside the skin of a disabled child. "Your phobia is so ingrained," Thomas went on. "Knowing the cause won't help you much, but time will. You don't have to be mute forever." Charisse wanted to ask how Thomas could be so certain. Words stuck in her throat, aching. She would never be able to speak. "You're speaking right now," Thomas said. "We're having a conversation." So it seemed. Thomas seemed to hear her thoughts as clearly as she heard the song of crickets. He saw her. Not a victim, not a target, not a lonely girl or a tragic news story, but the actuality of her, Charisse Chavez, without embellishments or labels. "Do you hear my thoughts?" Charisse wondered. "Yes," Thomas answered exactly as if she'd spoken out loud. "I'm a mind reader." The impossible statement was as stark and undeniable as the rainwater which dripped from the gutters and the blood dripping from her arm. Charisse could not imagine why a uniquely powerful psychic wanted to talk to the likes of her. Why try to save an unwanted teenager whose mother was in prison for murder? She was a girl who lacked friends. She lacked a future. Maybe Thomas simply felt compelled to reach out. Was he some sort of disabled superhero? "I'm not a hero." Thomas faced her with a pained expression. "Mostly, I work on staving off my own early death." He gestured at his frail body. "Everyone has problems, especially in a place like this. I have plenty of my own. Time is precious to me. I don't waste it. I only came out here because I judged that you were worth talking to. Charisse had never been so sincerely complimented.
Why?
She paused at the sound of her own voice, quavering like an old lady's. Her voice. She felt no fear of speaking in front of Thomas. None at all. There was no danger of misunderstanding. He would know what she meant, no matter how she messed up the words, no matter whether or not she used her voice.
Why do you believe I'm worthwhile?
She asked the question inside her mind, because that was more comfortable for her. Thomas made more folds in the paper.
Charisse, I absorb memories.
He looked ashamed. I've glimpsed the environment you survived, and I'm certain that it would have killed me or sent me to a loony bin. Very few people could grow up in that household and still see beauty in the world. You're one in a billion. You have a resilience that I want to, well, be around. Charisse had the impression that he meant every word. His sincerity made her smile a little. The expression felt brittle, as if her face was made of clay. Thomas faced her squarely.
Let's get something straight. I'm not trying to force a friendship.
We're both lonely. There's no point in treading around that issue. But I came out here because I'd rather not see your particular mind vanish. I have some first aid stuff in the back pocket of my wheelchair. He indicated her wounded forearm. Can I help you bandage that up? I've absorbed several lifetimes worth of medical knowledge, so I can make sure it doesn't get infected. No one has to know. He was offering to save her. If you refuse, Thomas said, then I'll stop bothering you. I promise. He seemed hesitant. I just figured I'd ask. The more Charisse studied Thomas, the more she realized how ancient he looked, despite his childishness. His body was frail and prepubescent, but his gaze? That belonged on a war veteran.
You see me. Thomas sounded grateful.
Your perceptiveness is a lot like mind reading. You have insights into everyone, but no one understands you. Charisse held her bleeding arm away from her clothing. She rummaged in the back pocket of Thomas's wheelchair, one-handed, until she found the adhesive bandage roll. Once she was done bandaging her cuts, Thomas handed her the folded paper.
For you, he said.
Charisse marveled at the crisp folds. Thomas had transformed a mundane sheet of notebook paper into a perfect origami lion.
Squeeze his mane, Thomas said, and he'll roar.
Charisse tried it. The lion roared silently.
There's a lion inside you, Thomas said. When you rip your mother's grip off your throat, everyone will listen.
So, JP, let's talk about Pro Writing Aid. And as they say on their website, it is the secret to polished and professional writing. As writers, we make the same mistakes. You use Pro Writing Aid, you can get clear, easy steps to improve your writing so you can share your ideas with confidence. Whether you're doing creative writing, business writing, academic writing, just composing an email and you want to sound smart, Pro Writing Aid will help you. And
100%.
There's something new. What is it, JP?
So Atticus, which is a wonderful program that includes book formatting, and it is developing aspects for writers so that it can basically be a one-stop shop for writers, has an integration with Pro Writing Aid now. So we've mentioned before that Pro Writing Aid has a lot of integrations with, you know, Google Docs and Microsoft Word, and now Atticus, which just makes it makes that tool Atticus really shiny and nice for authors that are looking for a one-stop place. But it's just the fact that Pro Writing Aid can integrate with so many programs so that you're able to use this sort of last line defense before handing it off to someone. It just makes it so much easier. I love using Pro Writing Aid because then I don't have people that are editing it looking for simple mistakes that I can find using Pro Writing Aid that I can learn from. And instead, they're looking at the deeper content and they're able to notate that. So I just find Pro Writing Aid so nice. So I love it when I hear a new integration has happened.
Absolutely. Check out Pro Writing Aid. It will help you be a better writer. ProWritingAid.com. Use our discount code Serial20. So JP, let's talk about LaterPress. So LaterPress is a platform built to help authors declare their independence. It lets authors create digital books and sell them directly to their readers through their own branded website. And there are new things coming to the platform every day in terms of discoverability and new features. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I put Nerds on LaterPress, and it was a really easy and really fast process, which was pretty cool. And one of the cool things was you can put a collection, and then you can put your, we put Nerds in the collection so that ideally if we do any spinoffs or if we do any like season two or like specifying those pieces, you can put those books in the collection, which is really nice. And it's a really nice way of like hierarchical pieces to it, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And it basically gives you your own website. Ours is nrds.laterpress.com. And you just direct your readers straight there and they see Nerds. It doesn't get blocked by anything else. There are no ads in the way. There are nothing. It's just straight up Nerds content for your readers to get straight to reading, which is different than some other platforms, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And I did the same thing, although I uploaded all of my books to a collection just so I had one place, you know, to direct mm-hmm. readers. And so I have Molecule Thief, Dark is Away, and the Steampunk Emerald Key is up there. So it's one link. People can see all your books and you can order them whatever way you want, you know, or your serials. You can put serials up as well. And and you can do it on a subscription model or pay per book. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, which was a really cool.
Yeah,
the pricing thing was pretty cool. Figuring out either doing per book or some type of a subscription model just to kind of give your readers different abilities to support you. Because some people really like the, you know, it's basically like a Patreon, but you just get content to read.
And the cut is just 5%.
Yeah. So test it out. Try it out.
Yep. Laterpress.com.
See you later, press. So we have a friendly mind reader and a severely troubled girl. I'm curious, what inspired you to write this serial?
Oh, man. So it's a giant epic magnum opus kind of project, which I've been working on for an embarrassingly long amount of time. I'm not going to say how long, but we'll say it's been more than 10 years. I mean, it's a giant story. It's 7 books, 1.1 million words. And it's very high stakes, epic scope. There's a galactic oppressive empire that needs to be destroyed and replaced with a better empire.
Wow. So with such a long running, series, which character are you excited for readers to read about and why?
Well, Thomas is kind of, I'd say he's the most central pivotal character. I do have dual protagonists that share a lot of the screen time. But Thomas, I think, is kind of the heart and soul of the series, where it's like, it's really, it's his war. Yeah.
So what is one thing that may never make it onto the page, but it's something that you spent a really long time researching and developing?
Oh, man. so much. Honestly, like, I invented a whole language, which I'm never going to use. So lots of world building, lots of different planets, lots of alien species, many of which I am not using. I ended up kind of focusing just on 3 alien species. The rest are kind of footnotes.
Curious though about this language, like what kind of went into the process of creating that language and how did that infer into the story?
So there's kind of a secret society, an underground society, and they've been 24,000 years they've just been underground, and so they have their own culture, their own language, and they're very isolated, completely isolated from the rest of the universe. The rest of the universe is very homogenous, where it's all been conquered by one species. And so everyone speaks the same language. They have the same culture. This underground culture, I kind of based the language a little bit on, so I went through Hebrew school as a child. So I learned how to read Hebrew, but not what it meant, which I always thought was a little strange. Like, why am I learning language without knowing what it means? You know, and then I also kind of studied Japanese for a little while, and I kind of blended those two together. I was like, well, it's a really interesting, they both have like really interesting differences from English, and I wanted to kind of dive into that a little bit. Yeah.
Very cool. So do you have a favorite sci-fi trope?
honestly, like a lot of my series is power progression fantasy, which I have always loved. And I know that that's kind of like not, some people don't like the chosen one trope, the hero who like rises to the occasion. And I know that that can be done badly and it can be done in a kind of unimaginative way a lot of the time. But I, when it's done well, I love it. Yeah.
So we saw that you're a big Wheel of Time fan, which I am too. And so what are some of your favorite movies or books that you draw inspiration from for this series?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Wheel of Time has always been like one of my favorites. Game of Thrones is also really up there for me, both the TV show and the books. I thought they both did pretty well, except for season 8. Mm-hmm. we shall not speak of that.
Nope, doesn't exist.
Yeah. Tad Williams' Otherland. I could go on and on, honestly. I mean, I'm thinking about doing a YouTube show just to review series because I read a lot of them.
I'm curious though, with those three that you mentioned there, what's kind of that like quality or aspect of it that draws you into those stories that you kind of pull out and reshape into your own?
Yeah, the interpersonal character dynamics. I think that that's like the heart and soul of a good series, where you've got like really exaggerated character personalities that like with shifting power dynamics, where you know, like their position in the world changes quite a lot over the course of the series, and how they relate to each other therefore changes quite a lot.
So I have a question on a different track. What is your favorite video game that you worked on?
Oh my gosh. That I worked on? yeah, I mean, honestly, like I was directing some SpongeBob games and those were fun because I had a lot of control, creative control. So for me, just having creative control is fun.
Excellent.
That's why we write.
Yeah, exactly.
So you publish on Wattpad. What does audience participation look like for you on that platform?
Oh, it's you know, honestly, for me, it's really been a great journey. I started in 2017, and I wasn't sure if I would get an audience. The platform was already getting kind of oversaturated at that point. So yeah, just bit by bit, I've gotten an audience. And the people that basically, I feel like there's like kind of a 12 chapter gauntlet in book one, where it's like, if people make it through that, they're likely to continue. so I kind of like seeing that. I see the readers voting, I see them commenting. And I just love the fact that I have some readers that have just been with it. I post a chapter a week and they've been with it for 5 years or more. And that's a pretty hefty chunk of someone's life.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So with writing that long, is there anything either in this serial or in other works that you're planning or dreaming up?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so this serial, like I still have big plans for publishing it. I'm kind of afraid of the whole book marketing thing. And that's part of the reason I went for serialization first. To me, serialization is a gentle introduction to gaining an audience. Whereas like, yeah, the ocean of book marketing is very intimidating to somebody like me. Yeah, but I'm planning to do that eventually, but I think I might like hire a virtual assistant or try to get some help doing that because I'm basically afraid to do it on my own. Yeah, and as far like future serials, yes. I'm currently writing a standalone novel, which I plan to serialize. And then I have an epic fantasy I want to write, which is going to be multiple novels. So, and I have other ideas as well. So I'm not short on ideas.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us a little bit more about do you want to tell us a little bit about your podcast, what it is, where people can find it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Stories for Nerds. Yeah. So it's just storiesfornerds.com. And I have two co-hosts, which are fabulous, fun people, Raphael and Scott. And we're all sci-fi writers, basically. So we met at the Superstars Writing Seminar. And we just kind of talk nerd culture, books, games, movies, what we're reading, what we're working on. So it's just kind of a chat kind of podcast.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Very cool. And as a final question, what do you like most about writing serial fiction?
I'm going to have to say the reader interaction. I love getting comments. And I know that's not on every platform, but it has been a great one on Wattpad. So right now, it's like I just posted a chapter and I'm seeing the comments rolling in, you know, so I kind of see people reacting to something. I'm like, ah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks today to Abby Goldsmith for letting us share their episode. If you liked it, you can read it on Later Press. The link is in the show notes.
And that's a wrap. Our thanks today.
What?
Why did I shout?
Maybe the shouting is related to the monster and coffee.
Probably. Time is broken.
How much is a lot of coffee? Time is broken. Time no longer. How much is a lot of coffee in your world?
I usually only have one cup of coffee, and I had two cups of coffee and a monster, and I don't know why. I was just like, I'm still feeling tired, and so I keep drinking, and now I'm just like, I'm that loopy kind of like 3-year-old child who should go down for a nap. That's what I am right now.
You're too tired to go for a nap.